the middle of the air.
Hi, this is Ken Butcher. Today in the middle of the air, we're talking to Cheryl Rhodes, a man with a long, interesting career in publishing and currently publisher of absolutely amazing ebooks. I have Cheryl Rhodes here. We're at the Novels and Novelty Bookstore, and thank them for letting us use the room today. And Cheryl, I'm going to just ask you, first of all, fill us in a little bit on your background as in the publishing industry.
Sure, Ken, be happy to. I've never made an honest living. I've been in publishing all my life. I started off straight out of college working for the Florida Times Union in Jacksonville, Florida. I had majored in art and minored in advertising and thought I was going to go to work for an advertising agency, but I was interviewing up in Jacksonville, and they said that they had a job with the newspaper.
Uh-huh.
And it was in the art department, but I got to work part-time with the Sunday magazine section.
Right.
So I started off there, and pretty soon I got pulled over to the Sunday magazine full-time. And the kindly old editor thought that I was a fairly bright kid, so he said, how would you like to try doing a book review? And I'd love to do that because I was making $62.50 a week.
Pulling it in, huh?
Which even then was below the poverty level.
And so what kind of time period are we talking about?
We're talking about the mid-60s.
Mid-60s, all right.
And so I was eager to do the book review because I got $5 for that. That was like about an 8% raise.
There you go.
And you got to keep the book. So I did book reviews, and he liked my writing, and he said, how'd you like to try writing a feature story? So he sent me out to write a feature story, and he liked what I did. It was funny, and he started giving me feature assignments, and before I knew it, I became the newspaper's chief feature writer.
Right.
And I won the Florida Press Association Award and the Association Press Award for feature writing. Became the feature writer for the Florida Times Union and the associate editor of the magazine section of a weekly magazine. And it was fun working for a weekly magazine because you got to make mistakes. People read it on Sunday morning. They wrapped their fish up in it that night and threw it away, and you got to try again next week.
Uh-huh.
So after 4 years there, I also became their film critic and a bunch of other stuff. And eventually, I thought it was time to move on, so I took a job, of all things, in the Bahamas. And I moved to the Bahamas, where I was the executive editor of a book publishing company there. Published the Bahamas Handbook, published the What to Do magazine, published Sun and Sixpence, a lot of things.
You know, I've read a little bit about your background.
Uh-huh.
About the time I read that, you went to the Bahamas
right.
to live. I thought, this guy's led a charmed life. It's like, yeah. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I think it's when you're young is a good time to be the expatriate. You know, you've got little to lose. And so I was there for about 4 years, and I decided, well, I'm making these guys money running their company. Why can't I do that for myself? So
right.
I decided to start a publishing company of my own for the first time. And so I knew I had to figure out a way to get back from the Bahamas to the States. And I knew that I had to come up with an idea that would finance that. So I did some research, and I found out that the Great Smoky Mountains National Park was the most visited national park in the United States.
Right.
And I'm from North Carolina and from over in Wilkes County. And so I decided to start a travel magazine up in Asheville.
Mm-hmm.
And I put together a business plan, and I found out that the vice chairman of Time, Inc. had a house in Lyford Key in the Bahamas.
Time, Inc.?
Time, Inc.
Wow.
So I called him up, and I said, I'm the editor of the local publishing company here, and I have a business plan. Would you be kind enough to look at it? And he grumpily said, I'll bring it on out. And so I go out there. I get through the gates. I go up to his house and knock on the door. The door creaks open, and this hand reaches out and takes the package out of my hand like Lurch out of the Addams Family, and I go away.
Yeah.
And about 2 weeks later, I got exactly what I wanted, which was a letter on Time, Inc. stationery saying, Dear Mr. Rhodes, we think your plan's a good one. We think it would work, but we only invest in things that we own outright, so this is really not for us.
Right.
So then I made an appointment to go downtown and visit with the chief investment officer of the Trust Corporation of the Bahamas, which was the largest trust corporation in the Bahamas. And I gave him my dog and pony show. I'd like to raise some money, start this magazine publishing company up in Asheville, and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And he says, well, we've got money to invest for our clients, but how do we know this is a good idea? I said, well, don't take my word for it. And I whipped out the letter and said, here's what Tom Inc. says.
That's cool.
He said, I'll get back to you. The next morning he called me and I had the money. So right. I came up here, started a publishing company, ran it for about 2 years, sold it. And then I got recruited to go to Illinois to launch a children's magazine called Cricket.
I remember Cricket.
Well,
I've seen that. My son said that.
I launched Cricket magazine, and I was there for about 3 years. And then I got recruited to go into New York to be the vice president and associate publisher of Harper's magazine.
Right.
And then from there, after about 3 years, I got recruited to go to what was then called Charter Publishing, which owned Ladies Home Journal, Red Book, and Sport Magazine, to be their vice president of consumer marketing.
Right.
And after about 3 years there, we sold off that company. I did about a six-month tour helping a friend out over at American Heritage Magazine, and then I got recruited to go to Scholastic, where I was a vice president and group publisher of all of their magazine publishing.
Mm-hmm.
And I launched a number of magazines, acquired a number of magazines, and then I cashed out my stock, and once again I went out and bought a publishing company, bought one out of Chicago, a small magazine called Opportunity that was kind of an entrepreneurial magazine.
Right.
I launched a second one.
Entrepreneurial in the sense of
how to make money. You know, sort of like Entrepreneur Magazine or Inc. Magazine.
Okay.
But this was for the guy that was going to start a business out of on his kitchen table.
Okay.
And then we started a second magazine called Income Plus, and then we started a bunch of newsletters like Retirement Opportunities and things like that.
Uh-huh.
And then I sold that company, and I then was recruited to go to Marvel Entertainment. And I was hired to be the acting publisher of Marvel. And then
this is the other thing I thought. You know, you ask a 10-year-old boy, what do you want to do? I want to publish.
You want to publish Spider-Man. I did.
Publish Spider-Man and live in the Bahamas. And,
well, I've done
or at least a couple things. So you can cross those two things off your
list. My bucket list.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I actually succeeded Stan Lee as the publisher of Marvel.
Uh-huh.
When they tried to hire me, the corporate attorney came running in and says, we can't give him that title because Stan's contract says he's the publisher for life.
Right.
And so they made me acting publisher. And after about 3 months, Stan called him up and said, hey, he's doing the job. Give him the title. And so I succeeded Stan Lee. And I was at Marvel for about 3 years during what they call the Comic Wars, in that it was owned by Ron Perlman when I came there, and it got taken over by Carl Icahn, and then it got taken over by the bankruptcy court because Perlman threw it into bankruptcy as a poison pill trying to keep Icahn off. And then it got bought by Ike Perlmutter. And so I helped the company together.
What sort of time frame is this in now?
This is in the mid-90s.
Mid-90s, okay.
And so then after Marvel got sold off, and it eventually got sold to Disney, then I got recruited to go to Reader's Digest.
Mm-hmm.
And at Reader's Digest, I was a vice president in their book division.
Okay.
And I spent about 3 years there, and the company was going through a lot of downsizing. And when they merged my division that I ran with another division, my wife said, well, let's not ever take another real job. Let's move to Key West, where we had a vacation home.
Again. A nice place to live.
And so we moved to Key West, and we've been down there for well over a dozen years.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not the type to sit around on my front porch in the rocking chair, so I did a lot of consulting with other publishing companies, and I did consulting with DC Comics, which is Superman and Batman.
Right,
and,
right.
And I did a lot of consulting with companies ranging from the Midwest to Honduras to I've got a client right now in China. And I've kept busy. But as I looked at my clients, I had a company that published books, and they asked me to look at the book market for them.
Mm-hmm.
And when I talked to my friends in book publishing, they said, it's a mess. It's just in turmoil. And so I said to myself, well, if you take all the new technology that's out, the e-readers, e-books, Amazon. What would I do differently if I were Random House?
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at it and I said, gee, if I were Random House, I'm kind of screwed. Because mm-hmm. I've got brick and mortar buildings, I've got revenue streams I can't just throw out, I've got bookstore deals, I've got printing deals. And yet, it's a publishing paradigm that doesn't work anymore to pay money up front to take a book and to pay to print it and to give it to bookstores on consignment and mm-hmm. then a year and a half later get a half of them back.
Right.
And then remainder them or store them. It just didn't seem like a very good business anymore. So I said, well, if I were to reinvent a publishing business for somebody that wasn't already invested in it, what would mm-hmm. I do? And I came up with a new formula of how to be simply a publishing company in cyberspace.
Right.
There's no brick and mortar buildings. There's no employees. It all exists online.
Uh-huh.
And we generally found that it served a whole new market that was developing. Amazon was taking over the world, and it together with all the other outside venues like Barnes & Noble and Kobo Books and mm-hmm. Smashwords and Apple iBooks and all of those covered the world. And you could run a whole publishing business without ever leaving your living room.
Uh-huh.
And so I put together this company, Absolutely Amazing eBooks.
Right.
And we simultaneously publish everything as an ebook and as a print-on-demand paperback.
Okay.
And we have a website, absolutelyamazingebooks.com.
Okay.
And we had four points of strategy. Point one was that we would only publish good content.
Right.
We're not a Vantage Press or a Vanity type of printing
right.
company. People don't pay us to publish them.
Right.
We only publish books that we like and think are good and think might sell.
Okay.
The second one is that it's digital first because we think that's the way the world's going, and we wanted to make sure that we were, you know, while we had ink on paper books for people who still preferred that,
mm-hmm.
we had the digital books which we could sell all over the world instantaneously.
Right.
The third thing was affordable prices. Our ebooks, none are priced higher than $3.99.
Right.
And our paperbacks are generally around $14.95. And then the last point is that we had something for everybody. We've got probably close to 30 genre categories.
Uh-huh.
So we felt that if anybody came to our website, we wanted them to be able to find something that interested them that they could buy for less than a cup of Starbucks coffee.
Right.
And so we started that company, Absolutely Amazing eBooks. We were profitable within 6 months.
And when did you start this? How long has this been?
A little over 3 years ago.
3 years ago.
And then about 2 years ago, we bought another publishing company called New Pulp Press.
New Pulp Press.
And New Pulp Press had been around for probably about 6 or 8 years and
uh-huh.
had won a lot of awards and gotten a lot of good reviews. And the guy who started it had been doing it kind of on his own, and he was a high school teacher. And he actually wrote a book that got optioned for the movies, so he decided to quit publishing and pursue his own career.
Right.
So we bought his company, and now we have the two companies that we run as sister companies. And we applied the same techniques that we use for Absolutely Amazing eBooks and New Pulp Press. And within about 3 months after taking it over, we moved it from losing money to profitable.
Right.
And then the next thing that we did that you might be interested in is we started, since our biggest category of sales were mysteries,
uh-huh.
and New Pulp Press actually specialized in neo-noir mysteries.
Right.
And
What kind of mysteries?
Neo-noir.
Okay.
You know, dark mysteries, sort of like the old film noir, but
right.
these are more modern.
Right.
And then Absolutely Amazing eBooks, its biggest genre sales were mysteries. And so we started an annual mystery fest in uh-huh. Key West, where we invite down famous mystery authors to speak, and people pay to come and attend and mingle with them and listen to panels and keynote speakers. And we've had such well-known authors as Jeffrey Deaver, W.E.B. Griffin, Robert K. Tannenbaum, Heather Graham, just on and on and on and on.
What time of year is that?
In June.
In June?
And as a matter of fact, this coming June, our very own local Renee Kumer is going to come down and be one of our speakers.
No kidding. That's great.
So she's going to join us. And we saw it as a way to not only extend our franchise, but a way to put some of our authors on the panels with New York Times bestsellers and give them greater credibility, greater visibility, greater promotion.
Right.
Then we did one more thing, is we started an annual mystery writing contest.
Okay.
And it's called the Whodunit Award. And it was started in honor of mystery writer Jeremiah Healy, who died after our first year, but he had been so helpful in helping it get launched that we, along with his fiance, mystery writer Sandra Balzo, started this mystery writing contest. And Jeremiah Healy had always said that the main thing about a mystery is that you know within the first three pages whether you're going to read it or not.
Uh-huh.
So for this contest, you've got to have the book completed, but you only submit the first three pages.
Oh, no kidding.
And our panel of judges judges from your first three pages the winner.
Uh-huh.
And the winner, we fly down, we let them attend the Mystery Fest.
Interesting.
We give them a big plaque, and we publish their book.
Interesting.
And because most of them are you know, people who are aspiring.
So they you really got to have a good hook there in the
first three pages. And that's true whether you're entering a contest or you're writing a book.
If you lose them right up front,
you've lost them.
Right.
And then we started a scholarship, and we took the Mystery Fest nonprofit, and we're starting to get grants and grow it. And and it all kind of works together, the Absolutely Amazing eBooks.
Mm-hmm.
And we have two local authors who we publish with Absolutely Amazing eBooks, Renee Kumer, who I just mentioned, and James Loy.
Yeah, I've been able to talk to both of them.
So, oh, great.
So that's great. It's a great follow-on to have you here on the podcast to kind of take us one step deeper into publishing,
and
how the publishing business works.
And you talk about all the strange and wondrous places I've lived. We're in the process of buying a house on Lake Lure up here.
Man.
So we will be going back and forth between Key West and Lake Lure. So,
man.
And
that's not too bad.
Well, it's not too bad. I like living in New York City, but I don't miss it.
Right. I hear you.
And I'm actually from Wilkes County, just a little over that way.
Right.
I'm basically a Tar Heel myself.
And when did you move away? How old were you?
When I graduated high school, I went to Wake Forest University on their Hankins Scholarship.
Uh-huh.
And after doing my 2 years of undergraduate work there, I transferred to Florida to Stetson University, where I majored in art and advertising. And then that's when I jumped off to the Florida Times Union.
I see.
So now you know my wondrous wandering.
Well, that's great. That's great. I talked to Renee about your publishing company. So let me ask you a little bit about the mechanics of how that works.
Sure.
You receive. I assume electronically.
We don't touch paper.
The manuscript.
We don't touch papers. Everything's electronic.
Do you have a group of readers that looks at it?
We have a team of people. Everybody works on a percentage, profit-sharing percentage. Nobody gets a salary.
Uh-huh.
And having been in the publishing business all my life, I've got a lot of publishing contacts, not only to publish their books, but also to help me edit books, to help me read books, print books, that sort of thing. And the way it works is kind of a nice little Henry Ford-like factory that takes place all in cyberspace. People submit a book to us electronically. They go to our website, and we have all the instructions of how to submit a book and what kind of format they should be in, that sort of thing.
Right.
We get the book. We give it a cursory read to see if we think it's something that we would be interested in. If not, we send it back. If we are, we have a reader go through it much more carefully.
Right.
And then we accept the book. Then we do a light edit of the book. We don't accept books that require major editing. We don't accept books that require a lot of restructuring.
Right.
We want to have a very clean, almost ready-to-go book. We will edit it. We will make changes as needed. But if the old days when Thomas Wolfe could come in with a stack of papers and throw it on Max Perkins' desk.
Yeah,
those are gone.
I was going to say, I think what the statement you just made. I think that's true of almost any editor now,
yeah.
or publisher rather, but they're not looking for. And that's exactly the analogy I was going to use. There's not Maxwell Perkins sitting out there.
No, anymore. There's not. I mean, I would like to think of myself as a Maxwell Perkins in the sense that I've discovered a lot of new writers.
Right.
And I've encouraged a lot of new writers.
Right.
But I haven't written their books for them.
Right.
And you get a lot of writers like that who have an idea. They can't figure out how to finish it. They give you all kind of jumbled stuff and expect you to kind of straighten it out for them. And,
right.
And, you know, what we say is, look, if you've got that and it looks like it's got something to it, we can recommend outside editors that you can work with.
Right.
You know, that you can hire to get your book in shape.
Yeah.
And then you submit it. Because you shouldn't submit a messy book to us or to Random House or to anybody else.
And I was kind of surprised when I got into writing that most people are out there, like you said, good editors, mm-hmm. and it's not prohibitively mm-mm. expensive to have a really professional person look at your work,
and
whether it's the structure or the line editing, either one. It's not...
Well, since you're not paying us anything, we're doing it at our expense, and we're publishing the book at our time and expense,
right.
and we're promoting the book at our time and expense, and then we're paying you a royalty.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want to invest that much in you.
Yeah, you know? I understand.
And we have published, since we started about 3 years ago, we've published over 300 books.
Wow. And let me ask you this. Between, what kind of time does it take between when a person submits a manuscript and you get back to them?
That's always iffy because it depends on how overloaded we are.
Right.
The core of the company is only a handful of people.
Right.
And so the initial work is done by the handful of people. If there's a whole bunch of books stacking up,
mm-hmm.
We may not get back to you for a month or two. Usually we try to get back to people within a few weeks. But when we accept your book, we let you know that it's not going to be instantaneous.
Right.
Not because we can't work fast, but because there's a lot of books in the pipeline ahead of you. And so we usually publish a book within about 3 months. Sometimes it takes us 6 months. But it's not like the old days where a more traditional mainstream publisher takes a year and a half.
Right. Right. I was going to say, even the month to get back, you sound a little apologetic about that.
Well, I am.
But it's not. That's faster than most traditional publishers will get back to you.
Well, that's true. And the other thing about us is that unlike most traditional publishers, we don't require you to have an agent.
Right.
And so the biggest problem that people have these days is getting their foot in the door.
Right.
Before I started the company, when I moved to Key West, a lot of people would knock on my door and say they had heard I'd been in publishing,
mm-hmm.
and could I tell them how to get their book published? They had a book, and here it is, and would
yeah.
you look at it? Would you read it? And I was nice, and I'd look at their book, and I'd uh-huh. give them good advice. And unfortunately, the way it used to work and the way it still works with many of the big publishers, certainly the big five,
mm-hmm.
is that you have to have an agent to get in the door to even be looked at, because
mm-hmm.
Publishers don't want to take over the transom manuscripts. They don't want to waste their editor's time reading bad manuscripts, so
mm-hmm.
they want an editor as a middleman who's got their reputation on the line to only submit good stuff.
Right.
They also don't want the legal liability of you saying, oh, I gave you my book, and then a year later you publish one just like it, you stole my idea.
Right, right.
So most of them require an agent as a middleman, and most agents are just got more clients than they want, and some
yeah.
of them are looking for other jobs themselves because the book publishing business has dried up to a certain extent, and
right.
they don't publish as many books as they did, and because the big-selling books are fewer and far between, they can't afford to carry the little books, the poetry books and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that out of all of our categories, poetry is the least selling of any of them.
We
publish it because, remember, my policy is something for everybody.
Right.
And so I've got a lot of different genre. Some sell and some don't.
Right.
But it's kind of like if you stock the supermarket, you can't just have bread, you know?
Right, right.
And so we have found a lot of new authors. We have given people a big start. It doesn't
mm-hmm.
cost them a penny. It's not like going to a vanity press and paying them to print your book.
Right.
And as such, we promote them, we get them out there, and it doesn't cost them a penny. Now, I would have to tell you that some people don't sell spit. Some their royalty check is 98 cents.
Right.
But on the same time, we've discovered some bestsellers. We've had a number of Amazon bestsellers.
That's great.
You know, Amazon ranking is kind of like a golf score. The lower number is better.
Yes.
And Amazon probably has, I would guess, about 12 million books.
Right.
And we've had some mysteries, like one of our authors, Bill Craig. His books usually rank and get down to about 5,000,
right,
which is not bad out of 12 million. And I've got a cozy mystery writer who, in the cozy mystery genre, her books have gotten down to number 16 worldwide. And so we've had some nice, you know, good home runs, but you can't guarantee that to everybody. And
you know, I gave a piece of advice to a writer one time based on my own experience.
Yeah.
So when you go on the Amazon webpage and look at your ranking, it will offer to tell you what the first place book in that is that week. You may or may not want to look at that. Because in my case, when my first book came out, it was Sarah Palin's autobiography. So you might be kind of shocked at what is just beating the pants off you at that given time.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think there's two reasons to look at it. One is to see what kind of books are selling.
Yes. Yeah.
And see how far off you are. But the other is that there is no justice in this world, and what catches on catches on. What we find is that books go viral for seemingly no reason, and suddenly you've got a bestseller on your hand, and it had little to do with you or the author or anything else other than that people just discovered it.
Nobody does seem to know the formula to that.
Wish we did. and I
although
know
there's certainly authors that, you know, get up there every time. You know.
Well, I think when you're established, it's pretty easy to stay up there. I'm friends with Judy Blume. She lives in Key West.
Okay.
And Judy tells me that she doubts that she could be successful if she were starting out today. She doubts that she could get discovered and become a best-selling author. And it's just that the market is so crowded, particularly these days with self-publishing.
Right.
There's probably 100,000 books published a month on Amazon. And most of those are self-published. And so you're lost among that crowd.
Right.
And most of those are poorly written, poorly edited. Not that there aren't some gems in there, but they're not by professional publishers, and so you just have somebody's what they wrote.
Yeah.
And therefore you get lost in a crowd, and it's lost in a crowd that kind of hides your own talent that you're putting out there.
Right.
So what we do is we try to promote all of our books. We do a lot of e-blast. We do a lot of social network marketing.
Mm-hmm.
We try to do target marketing. So if you've got a mystery book, we promote it to proprietary databases we have of people who like mysteries.
Okay.
If you've got a science fiction book, we got proprietary databases of people like science fiction.
I see.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
What we found interesting is that all the statistics say that the best-selling books online are romances.
Yeah.
But romances don't sell very well for us. We sell mostly mysteries, but like I say, we got something for everybody.
Yeah.
We've got everything from, you know, westerns to romance to mysteries to history to self-help to children's books to science fiction to us. I mean, you name it.
I think I saw something on your website about audiobooks. Are you getting into audiobooks?
We've gotten
as well?
Into audiobooks. We found that very interesting. There's a couple of different ways you can go about it, and we found some very good readers, and we try to match the reader to the book.
Right.
And you get to audition the readers, and sometimes you'll get as many as a dozen readers who want to do your book, who will put their hand up. And so we go through that carefully and pick the ones that we think are the right voice for the book. And we've had some good success. We're also starting to do a little bit of video, of streaming videos that we download. On the side, I've produced some movies and documentaries and stuff, and we're starting to add those to our lineup.
Have you found some books that for whatever reason, like maybe didn't do so well as a print or a electronic book, but they do well as audiobooks, or vice versa?
We haven't got enough experience in audiobooks to really answer that question yet. Uh-huh. All I can tell you is that we've been doing audiobooks for less than 6 months.
Right.
We've probably got maybe, as I say, we got 300 titles, give or take, all told, and we've only got maybe a little over a dozen audiobooks so far.
Okay.
And but we find that there's a correlation between if a book sells well in print, it sells well in audio.
Okay.
And if it sells bad in print, you're not even going to get anybody wanting to do the audio.
And the audiobooks, do you market them directly or through Audible or
we use
both?
Audible. Use Audible, and but we do our own promotions.
Right.
We do our own e-blast and different types of social network marketing and stuff. And it takes a while to find that audience.
Right.
Everybody is not into Audible books. And I have to complain a little bit is that while I think our books are really high quality, our Audible books, it's so darn hard that if you go on Amazon and you download an Audible book, getting your computer setting up and figuring out how to make it work is a nightmare.
I know.
It's got to get more than one click.
Yeah, I have the same complaint. I use iTunes, and I love Apple products, but their software drives me crazy.
Same.
And every time there's an update, it's like I'm starting over again. Yeah. But having said that, I love my little iPod.
Yeah.
I take it in the car. I take it when I work out at the gym. And I've become a kind of a devotee of other people's podcasts, as well as this one, and audiobooks. So I think it's another way to enjoy stories for people that like books.
Well,
like
I agree.
Books.
And when my wife and I drive from Florida up here to North Carolina, we go to the library and just stock up on Audible books.
Mm-hmm.
We listen going and listen coming.
Yep.
As a matter of fact,
the miles go by.
Oh, I could drive night and day listening to a book. The miles just fill away.
Yeah.
My wife is waiting for me across the street, and she said, as I got out of the car, she said, as we go back home, let's put on our audiobook. I want to finish it.
Exactly.
So,
Cheryl, before we go,
we're
kind of running out of time here. I want to be sure to get clear about how people can stay up with you, what you're doing, and with Absolutely Amazing Books. So what's the name of your website?
It's absolutelyamazingebooks.com. All one big word.
Okay.
Absolutelyamazingebooks.com. And when you go there, it will tell you, there's pull-downs that'll tell you about us, it'll tell you about the company, it'll tell you how to submit a book, it'll give you a sort of a on the left side of the homepage is a list of all the different categories. Over the top is a alphabetical list of books to go to specific books.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Meet the Author page where you can go look for a specific author, and there's links back and forth between everything.
Okay.
And it's really, really simple to use. What you do is you go to our homepage, you click on the genre you're interested in. You'll see a big row of all the books in that genre.
Mm-hmm.
You click on that book. It'll take you to a page that features a picture of the cover, a description of the book, usually the first page from the book that shows you can see how it reads,
right.
And then several red bars that say, buy Kindle, buy Nook, buy Kobo,
okay.
Depending on the kind of reader you have.
Okay.
And bing, 30 seconds later, you've got it downloaded.
Excellent. Well, Cheryl, thank you so much for talking to us today.
My pleasure.
And maybe we can hook up some other time.
I'd love it.
When we have more time, and I want to go back and talk to you about Marvel Comics and how, you know, they're still popular and based in movies and everything. But congratulations for being sort of a pioneer in all the new technology and helping out new authors, and we really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Now I've just got to figure out how to retire for the second time.
Nah, it's overrated. Thanks again.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Thanks for listening, and thanks to Cheryl and the Novels and Novelties Bookstore. To listen to other episodes, or better yet, to subscribe, you can visit us at themiddleoftheair.com. See you next time.